there was no one to quiet him. She rarely saw anyone here, only jailers and the servants who brought the food. They provided a brief moment of light with their torches, enough for Kelsey to have mapped out her cell with its empty floor and two buckets. She had not seen her own jailer since her arrival, and was just as happy to have it so. The darkness, the monotony, the unscheduled nature of meals, these things were at least gloomily predictable. But the jailer was a pure variable, and Kelsey preferred the grim certainty of her solitude. It was cold down here, and dank. She had seen no moat around the palais, but moisture was certainly leaking in from somewhere. But Kelsey was relatively fortunate. She had worn a warm dress for the early morning excursion across the bridge, and the heavy wool had taken minimal wear on the long road. She only felt the chill on rare occasions when wind moaned through the dungeons, a sure sign that there were either multiple entrances and exits, or a failure in the structure somewhere. She spent much of her time near the bars, listening, trying to understand the spatial distances in this place. The palais was not as tall as the keep, but it covered an enormous acreage. She might be as far as half a mile from the outer walls. At this moment, Kelsey sat against the wall beside the bars, trying to judge whether she was really hearing a certain sound, scratching and scraping on the far side of the wall. Based on the dim, torch-lit glimpses she'd gotten on her way in here, there was another barred cell over there. The Mort didn't like to waste space, nor did they like to give prisoners the barest sliver of privacy. There was someone there, and that someone was scraping something against the wall repeatedly and without pattern. Kelsey cleared her throat. She hadn't had a drink in several hours, and her voice seemed to feel each syllable as its own special rasp. "Hello?" she called in Mort. The scraping stopped. "Is someone over there?" The scraping resumed, slower now. Kelsey felt that whoever was over there was doing it deliberately, to show her that he'd heard, but simply wasn't answering. "How long have you been in here?" The scraping continued, and Kelsey sighed. Some of these people had undoubtedly been imprisoned for years, long past the time when they would have retained any interest in the world outside their cells. But she could not shake her own sense of urgency. The Tierling was safe, she told herself, safe for the 3 years she had purchased, so what did it matter if she rotted in here? Vague thoughts of William Tier flitted through her head, images of his utopia, his town, already beginning to rot from the inside. But that would happen whether Kelsey was locked up or not. The past in her head could be seen, but it could not be changed. Why not? Kelsey jumped, but before she could continue the thought, her ears caught a faraway sound. Boot heels, more than one set, coming down the hallway on her right. As they came closer, the scratching sound against the wall ceased. The heels descended two small sets of steps, staircases as yet unseen, at the far end of the corridor. Somehow, Kelsey knew they were coming for her, and she scrambled to her feet, so that when the torchlight came around the corner, it found her standing proud and straight inside her cell. There were two of them. One was Kelsey's jailer, his eyes as mindlessly jolly as before, holding a torch. And the other was a woman, well dressed in blue velvet. She was very tall of frame, with sharp eyes and the extra consideration of movement that told Kelsey she'd been trained somehow. Perhaps in combat. Kelsey cast back and found a nugget of information told to her by Mace long ago. The Red Queen's pages had to know how to handle themselves.
"She's filthy,"
the woman remarked in badly accented Mort.
"Did you not wash her up?"
The jailer shook his head, and Kelsey was pleased to see him looking slightly embarrassed.
"When did she last eat?"
"Yesterday, I think."
"You're a joy to your profession, aren't you?" The jailer gave her a befuddled look. And that was when Kelsey knew that it was all an act. There was something wrong with her jailer, deeply and fundamentally wrong. But he wasn't stupid.
"Give me that!"
the woman snapped, grabbing the torch and holding it high, her narrowed eyes locked on Kelsey's face.
"This woman has been beaten."
The jailer shrugged, staring at the ground.
"She was disorderly."
"This is a high-value prisoner. An under-jailer does not lay fingers on her except to save her life. Do you understand?"
The jailer nodded sullenly, a low gleam of anger in his eyes. But the anger itself did not frighten Kelsey nearly as much as how quickly he hid it. There, and then gone, tucked neatly from sight.
"Bind her hands and bring her up to the third floor,"
the woman ordered. The jailer unlocked the cell, and Kelsey tensed as the woman disappeared around the corner.
"Pretty is special,"
the jailer muttered to himself.
"But not special to them, like she is to me. Pretty is mine."
Kelsey's lip curled in disgust. It seemed the safest time to correct this particular misconception, since he could hardly beat her again without incurring the wrath of the woman in blue. She spoke carefully in Mort, enunciating every word.
"I belong to no one but myself."
"No, no, they would not have locked Pretty up if she wasn't meant for me. All my own."
Kelsey resisted an overpowering urge to kick him in the kneecap. She had seen Mace demonstrate the maneuver, one of the most painful wounds an unarmed man could inflict, right on the dome of the knee, shattering the bones into so many fragments. Kelsey had no magic these days, only her own force to work with, but she thought she could do it. And hearing this man howl in agony suddenly seemed the loveliest idea in the world. But there would be nowhere to go afterward.
"Hands,"
the man demanded, putting the torch in its holder. Kelsey held them out and allowed him to place manacles around her wrists.
"Pretty does not move quickly enough."
"Perhaps not," Kelsey replied. "But before Pretty leaves this dungeon, she is going to deal with you. Know that for a certainty." The man looked up, startled.
"Nonsense. She is only a prisoner."
"No. She is a queen."
"Yes."
The man finished locking her manacles and ran his palm over her hair. There were certainly worse places he could have chosen to touch, but the possessiveness in the gesture made Kelsey's skin crawl.
"My very own queen."
She rolled her eyes, sickened. "Christ, let's go."
Women shouldn't curse.
Get fucked. He blinked in surprise, but did not react, only took her arm and led her out of the dungeon. Kelsey would have given the world and all of its riches for her sapphires in that moment. Just the tiniest push with her mind, and the jailer would die screaming. She could make it last for days if she wanted to. Brutality, her mind whispered, and Arlen Thorne's face flashed behind her eyes, there and then gone. You meant to leave all that behind, remember? She did remember. That moment in the Red Queen's tent had put paid to all of Kelsey's easy ideas about the use of violence. But hatred was stronger than memory, infinitely stronger. And in her hatred, Kelsey felt an echo of the woman she had become in those last few weeks in the keep. The Queen of Spades. Kelsey had meant to lay that woman to rest. But she did not rest easily. Beyond the corridor, they went up several flights of steps. It was a different route than Kelsey had taken coming into the dungeon, and at the top of the last flight, she was disheartened to see a massive iron-barred door, two guards inside and two guards outside. So much for my ideas of escape, she thought grimly. A man could batter his brains out against those iron bars and get nowhere. She kept her eyes down as the inner guards unlocked the door. The jailer's hand brushed her bottom and she jumped. The longing for her sapphires felt like a physical thing, almost a fever. They emerged into a long, high hallway, draped in red silk, the bright sheen of the fabric glowing in the light of many torches. The effect was beautiful, and Kelsey felt, again, the incongruity with the Red Queen, the Witch Queen she had heard of throughout her childhood, the woman with no mercy, no heart. That's not so, her mind whispered. She does have a heart, and it's a complicated one, you know that. Kelsey knew. As the jailer led her up another flight of stairs, she wondered if the Red Queen had finally decided to kill her. Kelsey had spared the Red Queen's life, but felt sure that this fact would not enter into consideration. The Red Queen would view Kelsey as a pure liability now, for she knew too many things that the woman had tried to bury. She knew the Red Queen's name. I need to survive, Kelsey thought. Else how will I ever get home? And beneath that, quieter but no less powerful, how will I ever hear the end of the story? The Red Queen wanted something, or she would never have carted Kelsey to this hellhole in the first place, and Kelsey felt her mind girding itself up, putting her bargaining face on. They had bargained once before, she and the Red Queen, and Kelsey had won, but only by luck. She did not underestimate the woman in red. At the top of the third flight of stairs, the Red Queen's page waited. She waved the jailer away with a sweep of her hand. I will take her from here. The jailer frowned, the pout of a child denied a treat.
I should stay with her.
You should do as you're told. His eyes burned, and Kelsey, who had briefly considered sticking her tongue out at him, thought better of it. She had no intention of putting up with the worst of the man's abuses and delusions, but there was also no percentage in antagonizing him further. Just one moment, she thought as the jailer, with poor grace, handed over the key to her manacles. One moment with my jewels, and I could turn you inside out. Come along, the page told her. She had switched to tear now, and her tear was very good. I have a bath for you, and some clean clothing. Kelsey brightened at this prospect, increasing pace behind the woman until she was nearly jogging along. The jailer had at least left her boots to her, the good riding boot she had worn on that long-ago morning. They had stood her in good stead when she fled across the new London Bridge. Would Mace rebuild the bridge? There was very little money in the treasury, and an enormous building project seemed like an extravagance. "Look at you," her mind jeered, "trying to govern, even from here." Taking a bath in front of the woman was difficult. Kelsey had long ago banished Anderley from her bath chamber, but at least Anderley was sometimes helpful, whereas this woman merely leaned against the wall, watching her without expression. "What is your rank?" Kelsey finally asked. "I am Her Majesty's page." So, Kelsey had been right. But still, a tier page? Kelsey herself had no real pages. Anderley covered the job well enough. But the Red Queen had a well-known disdain for all things tier. This woman must be something special. "What is your name?"
"Emily."
"How do you come to be here? Were you in the lottery? Wash your hair, please. We'll check for nits when you get out." Kelsey stared at her for another moment before dunking her head. Her hair, long and straight now, Lily's hair, was a tangled mess, lying halfway down her back. It took a long while to comb out, but to Kelsey's relief, she had no lice. They gave her a black dress to wear, whether by design or accident, Kelsey didn't know, but she accepted the garment gratefully, and found it made of comfortable, undoubtedly expensive wool. "Come," the page told her. "The Queen waits." Kelsey followed her down another long corridor, this one lined with dark fireplaces. There seemed to be guards everywhere, and while they wore the Queen's red, they did not have the feel of close guards. Unlike Kelsey, the Red Queen did not have to barricade herself in a single wing of her palace with a hand-picked group. What would it feel like, Kelsey wondered, to be that secure on the throne? They were headed for two black doors at the far end of the corridor, blocked by a man who clearly was a close guard. He seemed vaguely familiar, but there was something else, a sense of pride in his station, even though it merely consisted of standing there. For the men in the long hallway just past, guarding was merely a job. But not for this one. At a nod from the Chamberlain, he knocked twice before opening the door. Kelsey had expected a throne room of some sort, but only a few steps in, she realized that this was a private chamber. Everything was hung with crimson silk. Walls, ceilings, even the enormous bed that dominated the room. The room also held a vast oakwood desk and a sofa upholstered in red velvet. Nothing here was gold, and that forced Kelsey into a reassessment of the Red Queen. Velvet and silk were luxuries, certainly, but the space was not gaudy or tasteless. It was a room that conveyed a forceful personality.
"Kelsey Glynn."
The Red Queen stood in the far corner. Her dress matched the hangings so perfectly that Kelsey had missed her the first time around. But now she saw that the Red Queen was unwell. Her skin was pallid and waxy, as though with fever. Her eye sockets had the bruised look of someone who had not slept soundly in a long time. That makes two of us, Kelsey thought ruefully.
That will be all, Emily. Ghislaine, leave us.
Penn would have argued with Kelsey at this point. But thinking of Penn was a mistake as well. The image of his stricken face on the new London Bridge would be with Kelsey all of her days. But the Red Queen's close guard merely bowed and left the room. He was the man who had manacled her in the tent, Kelsey remembered suddenly. She had thought he meant to cut her throat, but he had merely clamped her in irons and taken her away. How could that day seem so long ago?
Sit,
the Red Queen commanded in Mort, indicating the crimson sofa. She might be ill, but her dark eyes remained as unperturbed as ever, a calm port in a raging storm. Kelsey admired that outward serenity, wished she knew how it was done. She was trying to hold on to her bargaining face, but it was difficult. Her sapphires were here somewhere, and though Kelsey had willingly given them away, the Queen of Spades wanted them back. She seated herself, a clumsy experience with bound wrists, and found that the sofa was the softest piece of furniture she had ever encountered. She seemed to sink into the plush velvet. The Red Queen sat down in a nearby chair, staring at her for a long moment until Kelsey was acutely uncomfortable.
"You used to be a plain thing," the Queen remarked, "when I saw you in dreams. But you are not so plain any longer, are you?"
"You neither, Lady Crimson." The Red Queen's jaw firmed, a sign of irritation.
"How are your accommodations?"
"None too comfortable, but I've been in worse places."
"Really?"
The Red Queen's gaze sharpened, interested, and Kelsey reminded herself to watch her step. In the tent, the Red Queen had recognized her out of Lily's portrait. She didn't know Lily, but her fascination with the portrait and with its subject might be an important bargaining chip. But what was the bargain? What could Kelsey possibly offer that would make this woman set her free? "It was worse to be stuck in a doomed city with my hands tied."
"Your hands weren't tied."
"I didn't know that," Kelsey almost answered, but then she thought of Mace. Mace, who, when dealing with a known enemy, would have given nothing away. Thinking of him steadied her, allowed her to find her own authority. She would never see Mace again unless she got home. The Red Queen reached into the pocket of her dress and came out with both sapphires, dangling them from her fingers.
"I wish to know what you've done to these jewels. Why won't they work for me?"
Kelsey stared at the two jewels, trying to understand her own feelings. She had been longing for them for days, thinking of the hell she could rain down if only she had them in her hands again. But now that she saw them, she felt nothing, just as she had felt nothing when she had taken them off. What did that mean? Seeing that she was not going to reply, the Red Queen shrugged.
"No one understands them, the tear jewels, not even those who wear them. Alyssa never had the slightest idea. She merely thought them pretty pendants to wear around her neck. But she was attached to them as such. I could never get her to take them off, not even as the price of her kingdom."
"I've heard many opinions of Queen Alyssa now, but I'm curious. What is yours?"
"That she should never have been given a kingdom to rule."
"That much is obvious to everyone. But what was she like?"
"Shallow," careless?
The very words Kelsey would have chosen. She shrank into the cushions.
Let me give you some free advice, Glynn. You are too invested. The tie of blood is only as strong as you want it to be. Some parents are poison, and it's best to simply let them go.
Did you find it that easy?
Yes.
The Red Queen moved to sit at the far end of the sofa.
Heir and spare or no, my mother, like yours, should never have borne children. Realizing that, I left her behind and did not look back.
She's lying, Kelsey thought. She had seen into this woman's mind, if only briefly, and the beautiful queen was littered all over the landscape.
Who is your father?
The Red Queen asked.
I confess I am curious to know.
So am I.
You do not know either?
The Red Queen shook her head, smirking.
Ah, Alyssa.
You won't attack me by attacking my mother.
Who attacks her? I have a different man in my bed every night. We are not the tier to demand that women ignore all the pleasures of the world. But it was unlike Alyssa to keep secrets. And even more strange,
the Red Queen mused, holding up the sapphires,
that these did not tell you.
Kelsey shrugged. Perhaps not so odd. I've never had a burning need to know.
You do not care who your father is?
Why should I? He did not raise me, did not shape me. I had others for that.
But blood does tell, Glynn.
The Red Queen smiled sadly, and Kelsey was alarmed to find herself almost sorry for the woman. She would not delve further into the Red Queen's memories, but she could not unstring the connections she had already made. The beautiful queen had traded away her daughter, as one would trade a steer at market. And that betrayal still loomed over the Red Queen's mind, darkening it, scorching the earth beneath.
Blood raises us and shapes us in ways we don't yet understand.
Ah, yes. I've heard that you call yourself a geneticist.
It is only a word. In truth, I know very little of genes themselves. We have not regained that technology, not yet. But traits, Glynn, traits. These I watch and these I analyze. We are back at the level of Mendel. But still there is much to be learned and understood about behavior.
Mendel dealt in physical traits.
He was not ambitious enough. There are mental traits to be passed down as well.
This from the woman who tells me blood means nothing? The Red Queen smiled in acknowledgement, but the smile gave Kelsey no ease. What did the woman want from her? You said yourself that no one understands these jewels. What makes you think I do?
You must. They have been rendered lifeless. I've never heard of such a thing, but there it is. What have you done?
I don't know, Kelsey answered truthfully. Why don't you ask Ro Finn?
Who is Ro Finn?
Kelsey narrowed her eyes. If the woman meant to play with her, she would not converse at all, but then, searching back through the memories she had glimpsed in the Red Queen's mind, she realized that it was perfectly possible that the Red Queen had never known Ro Finn's real name. The two of them had a mutual history, clearly, and Kelsey had glimpsed something about a dead child. But it was already gone. Her foray into the woman's mind had been too brief.
Stop!
The Red Queen grabbed her wrist.
I know what you're doing. It's unfair.
Unfair? You're holding me in a cell.
What you're examining is not yours. You stole it. I did not look through the contents of your mind.
But you would if you could, Lady Crimson.
What difference does that make?
The question startled Kelsey. She felt very sure that it did make a difference. But did it, really? Mace would have said yes. But Kelsey was no longer sure. Just because she could, just because others would have done the same, did that actually make it right?
I get a weekly report on the state of your kingdom,
the Red Queen continued, her voice laced with mockery.
Kelsey Glynn, a queen of great principle. Your government trumpets the value of privacy. Even your laughable new judiciary has decided cases on this basis. Privacy is privacy, Kelsey Glynn. Now, are you a queen of principle, or are you not?
Kelsey grimaced, finding herself checked. There was hypocrisy in the Red Queen's argument, but that did not change its underlying logic. She could not believe in privacy for some and invade it in others. After another moment's pause, she dropped the fabric of the Red Queen's memories, and they seemed to puddle, a shapeless mass at the foot of her mind, as when she stepped out of a dress. The Red Queen nodded, a hint of triumph in her voice.
Principle weakens you, Glynn. It will always be used against you at the most inconvenient time.
Lack of principle is worse.
There is a middle ground.
That would be the Mort way, I suppose. All things inconvenient, discarded.
What have you done to these sapphires? I demand to know.
What is the information worth to you?
Don't test me, Glynn. You live only on my sufferance.
She does want something, Kelsey realized. Not just information, but something else. The idea elated her, and she leaned back against the sofa, crossing her legs.
You do not speak.
Why should I? I haven't heard an offer. The Red Queen's face twisted. She reminded Kelsey of a dog stuck in front of forbidden food. I could curl up and sleep in the hollows under your eyes, Lady Crimson. What ails you?
You are right, the Red Queen admitted slowly. I do not sleep well. I am beset by visions.
Of what?
The future. What else?
The past, Kelsey nearly replied, but kept her mouth shut.
A plague has descended on my land.
Kelsey blinked. Disease?
Not in the way you mean. This plague comes out of the Fair Witch.
A cold hand seemed to steal inside Kelsey's chest.
In your tier, he's called the Orphan. An ancient monster filled with spite.
The Red Queen eyed her narrowly.
But I think you have seen him differently, Glynn. A young man, perhaps? A young man, handsome as the devil himself.
Kelsey kept very still, for she did not trust the woman in front of her even an inch. But without volition, her mind moved backward, far back into the past, where a boy named Roe Finn already felt slighted by William Tyr's town. He's always been here, Kelsey thought, always here, waiting to wreck my kingdom. Perhaps the whole new world, and I let him out.
A horror moves across the north, sweeping my people south. Entire villages have disappeared.
What sort of horror?
Children,
the Red Queen replied, her face twisted with distaste and something else, guilt.
They're moving from village to village, slaughtering the old, scavenging the young.
Kelsey closed her eyes. In the moment she had forgiven Finn, she had felt the badness of the bargain, had known that she was once again being tricked by exigency into making a terrible decision. Behind her closed lids, she glimpsed the cages in front of the keep. The special cages, made for small children. The memory brought not comfort but a sense of great futility. Had she done anything of value since taking the throne? Anything that would mean something in the long run? Ozymandias, King of Kings, her mind whispered, the words not snide but plaintive, the tone of a wind that scraped the landscape, sweeping all before it, leaving nothing behind. Carlin had made her memorize Shelley's poem, and now she saw why for certain. Why children? She asked.
I don't know. Always the man has wanted children. For years, I had to keep back a portion of the shipment for times when I needed his help.
What sort of help?
He knows things. Simply knows them. If I had a rebellion brewing somewhere, he knew, and I could act before conspiracy found its legs. If I needed to find someone, a fugitive, a traitor, he would know where. Except for you, Glynn. He has protected you all your life. He was happy to give information on other matters, for a price, always a price, but he would never give me anything about you, your location. Why do you think that is?
Kelsey turned away, feeling sick again. The badness of the bargain.
Fire allows him to travel where I could not. But he no longer needs the fire. He comes and the children come with him, moving from village to village, using my people as meat.
The word seemed to stab a soft place behind Kelsey's ribs, but she merely shrugged and asked, "What do I care? He told me his hatred lay here."
In Mortmain.
With you, Lady Crimson. What do I care if he comes for you?
Don't be a fool, girl. The damage these children inflict is not random. One village at a time they tear apart, houses wrecked, fields churned to mud, graves disinterred. They search for something.
Disinterred graves. Another echo of the town. Kelsey was disquieted, if only because past and present were supposed to remain separate. Even Lily's time, powerful though the vision had been, had always been distinct. What business did Tyr's people have in the current world? She shook her head to clear it. Search for what?
Who can say? But if they don't find it in my kingdom, they will come for yours.
Finn can't be so powerful as all that.
He can be, and you know it. This creature has survived for centuries on spite alone.
Well, what am I to do about him?
You idealists are all the same.
The Red Queen spat.
You assume that because you wish no harm, your decisions are always harmless. This thing was restrained, Glynn. bounded by magic so dark that even I could never discover its source. Now, that spell is broken, the orphan is free, and I know that you have done it. This plague is yours.
Kelsey sensed her own temper stirring, roiling beneath the surface calm she projected, and she welcomed it, as though it were an old friend at her door. You have a nerve, Lady Crimson. You wish to discuss responsibility? Let's talk about yours. Thousands of people stolen from my kingdom, men and women and children, brought here to be worked and screwed until they dropped dead of abuse. And how many did you hand over to Finn yourself? You've been taking a disproportionate number of children since the shipment started, and I'll wager my crown that's where they've been going. If my hands are bloody, you're swimming in it.
Will that allow you to sleep at night?
Kelsey gritted her teeth. Arguing with this woman was maddening, for hypocrisy seemed to shame her not at all. Perhaps not, but I don't need fear to rule my own kingdom. I have no secret police, no ducat.
But you wish you did.
You think I'm jealous? Kelsey asked incredulously. Of you?
I have kept my people safe and fed and housed for more than a century. You can only dream of such an accomplishment. Instead, you've wrecked us all without a second thought.
You don't know me. I agonize over every decision I make.
No decision so damaging as this one. The dark thing,
his name is Ro Finn. You really don't know very much about him, do you?
Neither do you.
Oh, but I do, Kelsey replied, seeing a sudden glimmer of a path. I know more about him than you could imagine. He grew up in William Tyr's town. His mother was named Sarah. He was a gifted metal worker.
You're lying.
I am not.
He would never tell you these things.
He didn't. The Red Queen stared at her for a long moment.
What is your source?
You're not the only one beset by visions. Kelsey hesitated. It was second nature by now to deny the truth of her fugues, then continued. I see the landing. The time when New London was no more than a village on a hill ruled by William Tyr.
What use is a vision of the past?
That's a fine question, but I see it all the same. 15 years after the landing, Tyr's town just beginning to rot from the inside. As she said the words, Kelsey realized that history had failed them. Always, in Carlin's classroom, the fall of Tyr's utopia had been ascribed to the death of Jonathan Tyr. But it had begun much earlier than that, all of humanity's old vices creeping back in. Kelsey sensed them, even in Katie, who had been raised by one of Tyr's oldest and most trusted lieutenants. Even Katie had doubts. Maybe we aren't capable of being satisfied, Kelsey thought. And the idea seemed to open a chasm inside her. Maybe utopia is beyond us. But no, she didn't believe that.
And the orphan, Finn, as you say? He was there?
The Red Queen asked. Yes, little more than a child.
But vulnerable,
the Red Queen murmured, her eyes beginning to gleam.
Everything is vulnerable in infancy.
Perhaps, But I must live long enough to discover that vulnerability. My visions are not unified. They progress in time, sometimes by leaps and bounds, like a story in chapters.
How strange,
the Red Queen mused, but then her gaze sharpened.
You still have these visions, even though I hold the tear sapphires.
Yes.
How can that be?
I don't know.
This Ro Finn, can he be killed?
I think so, Kelsey answered truthfully, for she sensed that this was so. Young as she was, Katie's sight was very clear. The boy, Finn, was undeniably arrogant, but there was fear there too, carefully hidden, driving him. But fear from what source?
But you don't know how to kill him.
My visions come unbidden. I don't control them. You have to give me time.
Time? With this creature breathing down my neck?
The Red Queen turned away, but not before Kelsey had seen something extraordinary. The Red Queen's knuckles locked together, so white that they seemed as though they might split and begin to bleed. What is it you're afraid of? Kelsey asked softly. She didn't expect an answer, but the Red Queen surprised her. The words muffled as she spoke over her shoulder.
You think I don't care about my people, but I do, just as you care about yours. I have built this kingdom from nothing, from a disordered mess into a machine. I won't have it torn down. I care about my people.
Not as much as you care about yourself, Kelsey thought, but she kept the words locked behind her lips. I need time, she repeated firmly, time to find out what he's afraid of. And I want a different jailer. The Red Queen stared at her for a moment, her brow furrowed.
Then barked, Emily!
The page entered, bowing. Yes, Majesty?
Who is her jailer?
Strass, Majesty.
Strass?
Why do I... 3 years ago, Majesty, there was an incident, the page replied in her poor mort. I was not here, but heard it told of. A female prisoner.
Ah.
The Red Queen grimaced, gesturing toward Kelsey.
Did he do that to her face?
And elsewhere, Majesty. The Red Queen shook her head and turned back to Kelsey.
That should not have happened. I will give you another jailer, a woman with no such tendencies.
Why do you keep a jailer with such tendencies at all? The Red Queen waved Emily away and waited until the doors closed to answer.
Because he is good at his job. Prisoners do not escape.
Kelsey thought of Ewan in the keep, who had never let a prisoner escape either, who would hurt no one by his choosing. That's no excuse.
Who are you to judge? A mad dog captains your guard.
Another word about Lazarus and I help you with nothing. Jailer or no. The Red Queen's eyes lit with anger, and Kelsey realized how novel this must be for her. To seek aid. With her temperament, it must be nearly intolerable. If you want me to help you with Ro Finn... Then the exchange goes both ways. You must tell me what you know about him. The Red Queen nodded, and Kelsey was astonished to see that her hands were trembling. I'm not the only one who fears the past, she thought. She has even more to regret than I do. And I want my sapphires back.
Not yet.
Why not? They're of no use to you.
But of great use to you, Glynn. We must have some basis for trust first.
Kelsey laughed. There can be no trust, Lady Crimson. Only mutual self-interest. The Red Queen frowned, and Kelsey had the odd feeling that the woman wanted to trust her. Clearly she had missed much on her brief venture through the Red Queen's mind. There were still many things here that she did not understand, but beneath the woman's superficial poise, Kelsey sensed a desperate unhappiness. Could she be lonely? Kelsey wondered, and then, is that even possible? The Red Queen held out a hand. Kelsey stared at the offering for a moment, feeling uneasy. If the recent past had made anything clear, it was her inability to recognize a bad bargain.
Well?
Instinct is your best advisor. Barty's voice in her head, calm and undemanding, the very opposite of Carlin's.
Learn all the knowledge in the world, but your gut will always know best.
Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair, Kelsey murmured. She grasped the Red Queen's hand and shook. Chapter 4. Brenna. No more tears now. I will think upon revenge. Mary Stuart. Pre-crossing Anglo. There was blood on her hands. She stared at her palms, trying to remember. The past few days were a blur, but then everything had been a blur since her master had died. From that moment on, she did not remember time as a concrete thing, only a river in which she occasionally bumped against the shore. She remembered killing the Queen's guard, but not how she had escaped afterward. She did not know how she had gotten here. To her left was a small stream. Brenna bent and rinsed her hands, scrubbing at her nails to get rid of the dried blood. She had killed a man in Burns Copse, she remembered now, killed him for food and coin. She had caught him before he had time to pull a weapon, and he had merely stared at her, hypnotized, until she slipped a knife between his ribs. He had a horse as well, but she could not ride, and there would be no way to sell the horse without attracting attention. The entire tier thought her albino, and the master had said that was a good thing, a good secret to keep. But she was no more albino than she was madwoman, and since the master had died, she had already begun to recover some of her colour, her life. But not enough to sell a horse without anyone noticing. Not yet. Not enough to blend into a crowd. The master. She had shed no tears for him, but that was only because tears were such a cowardly way to grieve. First, one sought vengeance, and then, long years later, when all ledgers were balanced, one could wallow in sorrow. The master's voice still echoed in her head, screaming. She could not quiet the sound. She had felt him die, felt his agony, and worse, his absolute panic in that final moment when he had realized that there was no way out, that he had finally met a force with which he could not strike a deal. She had been taking on his pain her whole life, ever since they were children. The effort had turned her white. She straightened from the stream and turned east again, seeking her quarry. She did not use her sense of smell, not precisely. Rather, it felt as though she were cutting through distance, wading through thousands of people, all their myriad feelings like muddy water, until she found exactly what she sought. This particular gift had been quite useful to the master, for whenever someone tried to flee the shipment, there was no way to hide from the tracker inside Brenna's head. It was a powerful skill, and when she was young, the Caden had tried more than once to acquire her, to cleave her from her master. She had killed three of them before they finally gave up. Last year they had tried again. Several of them had come to the master, requesting a temporary loan of her services to find the Raleigh heir. But they would not pay what the master demanded.
If they had only paid,
Brenna thought fiercely. This particular path was one that her thoughts had trodden many times before, but it grew no less bitter, no less urgent.
If they had only paid, perhaps the master would still be alive.
She turned her face into the wind, sensing its movement on her tongue. The bitch was out there still, but no longer moving. Now she was in a cold, dark room. Brenna tested the walls, tasted them on her tongue, and found them to be thick stone.
"Imprisoned, are you?"
she whispered. She could not be sure, but she fancied the bitch could hear her. There was power in her, great power. Brenna could sense it even now, distant and faint, just as she'd always been able to sense the force up in the Fairwitch. She had briefly considered turning her steps northward on this journey, travelling up to the mountains and seeking assistance. Whatever was up there was powerful for certain. Brenna felt its pull beneath her feet. But there was some sort of upheaval going on in the Fairwitch now, and she could sense the lines of force that had always underlain the Tierling beginning to shift. Too uncertain, and she wanted no distractions. She had food enough to get her to the Mort border, and really, she needed very little to sustain her. Rage was more nourishing than food. But if the bitch was in the Domain dungeons, she might be beyond even Brenna's reach. It would serve the master nothing if Brenna died trying to get into the palais. There must be another way. After another moment's thought, Brenna began to look around the woods. Most of the animals had fled at her approach, but they were beginning to creep out again, now that she was still. A few minutes' searching found her a grey squirrel peeping out from behind a tree. She was on it before it could blink. The squirrel bit and tore at her, but Brenna ignored the sting. Pain was only a trick of the mind, after all, and wrung its neck. Pulling out the dead man's knife, she slit the squirrel from throat to belly, allowing the blood to drip and puddle on the ground. She had to be quick. Blood would bring other predators, and they might attract a hunter. She could deal with such a person, but had no wish to leave a trail behind. She was free now, yes, but the master had often told her never to underestimate the mace. Tossing the squirrel aside, she bent to the small puddle of blood, taking a deep copper breath. Knowing where someone was, that was easy. Finding out where they were going to be was more difficult, but it could be done, and probably far more easily than getting into the Mort dungeons on her own. What if she dies there? Brenna refused to consider that idea. The bitch's death in Mort custody would not be pretty, but it would be a holiday compared to what Brenna had in mind. Brenna had suffered, the master had suffered, and she did not believe the future would rob them of revenge. She remained very still, staring into the scarlet puddle for a long time, her eyes wide, each breath a hiss of pain. A quarter of a mile away, on the Mort Road, traffic continued.